ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Tu paramed vyavastito vijnana drig vidya surandhita shayah svaparshnina pidya gudam tato nilam staneshu shat sunamayej jita klamaha Itham, thus by Brahman realization. Muni, the philosopher. Tu, but. Uparamet, should retire. Vyavasthita, well situated. Vijnanadrik, should retire. Sorry, by scientific knowledge. Virya, strength. Surandhita, well-regulated, Ashayaha, aim of life, Svaparshnina, with the heel of one's foot, Apidya, by blocking, Gudam, the air hole, Tataha, thereafter, Anilam, life air, Staneshu, in the places, Shatsu, six primary, Unnamayet, must be lifted, Jita Klamaha, by extinguishing material desires. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: by the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which the stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. Purport: there are many Dharatmas who claim to have realized themselves as Brahman and yet are unable to conquer material desires. In the Bhagavad Gita 18:54, it is clearly explained that an absolutely self-realized soul becomes completely aloof from all material desires. Material desires are based on the false ego of the living being and are exhibited by his childish and useless activities to conquer the laws of material nature, and by his desire to lord it over the resources of the five elements. With such a mentality, one is led to believe in the strength of material science. With its discovery of atomic energy and space travel by mechanical vehicles, and by such tiny advancements in material science, the false egoist tries to challenge even the strength of the Supreme Lord, who can finish all man's tiny endeavors in less than a second. The well-situated self, or Brahman realized soul, perfectly understands that the Supreme Brahman, or the Personality of Godhead, is the all-powerful Vasudev, and that he, the self-realized living being, is part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. As such, his constitutional position is to cooperate with him in all respects in the transcendental relation of the served and the servitor. Such a self-realized soul ceases to exhibit his useless activities of attempting to lord it over material nature. Being scientifically well-informed, he fully engages himself in faithful devotion to the Lord. The expert yogi who has thoroughly practiced the control of the life air by the prescribed method of the yoga system is advised to quit the body as follows. He should plug up the evacuating hole with the heel of the foot and then progressively move the life air on and on to six places: the navel, the abdomen, heart, chest, palate, eyebrows and cerebral pit. Controlling the life air by the prescribed yogic process is mechanical, and the practice is more or less a physical endeavor for spiritual perfection. In olden days, such practice was very common for the transcendentalists, for the mode of life and character in those days were favorable. But in modern days, when the influence of Kali age is so disturbing, practically everyone is untrained in this art of bodily exercise. Concentration of the mind is more easily attained in these days by chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The results are more effective than those derived from the inner exercise of the life air. Om Gyanam Nirandasya Gyanam Shilakya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. By the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole, through which stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot, and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So here this verse is teaching us, or telling us how to quit the body. So all of us are going to die, we take birth, and then one day we die. So here it's the ancient way, or the means of quitting the body by by Ashtanga Yoga is being described here. So here it's interesting, there's a progression here. It says that first, by scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization. When one is situated in absolute realization, one will be freed from material desires. And when one is freed from material desires, one quit the body and go back to Godhead. You see, there's a whole progression over here. So here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, he mentions the word duratma. So in this material world, there are two kinds of beings. There's the duratmas, and they are the Mahatmas. So of course we hear of the Mahatmas in Bhagavad Gita, and we have Mahatma Prabhu also here, who's back here with us. So he's a real Mahatma. So Mahatma anastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim abhayam. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that a Mahatma is one who is a great soul, who is not deluded, and who is under the protection of the divine nature. And such a person is fully engaged in devotional service because they know the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Mahatma is one who understands that, yes, I'm a Jivatma, I'm a soul, and I'm a servant of Krishna. And the goal of my life is to serve Krishna. So a Duratma is the opposite of that. So Duratma also means a cripple-minded person. So if we take this word cripple, crippled means someone who has a severe limitation of some kind. You know, sometimes you see crippled people, they're struggling to walk, or their back is broken. So they have some kind of severe limitation which hampers their activities. So most people in the material world are duratmas, because most people in this world are cripple minded. So their mind is crippled, has a severe limitation, and that limitation is to identify with the body and to think oneself as independent of Krishna. So all of us are, we have a very intimate relationship with Krishna, we are servants of Krishna. But a cripple-minded person thinks, there is no God, I'm simply a combination of chemicals. I'm this body, and the goal of life is to enjoy, is to satisfy the desires of the body to the fullest extent. So such kind of thinking is cripple mind. And the word duratma also means, if you see dur means very far away, or it can also mean very difficult. Prabhupada mentions dur means very far away. So a duratma is very far away from Krishna. So a person with a duratma mentality, they are far away from Krishna. Though Krishna, as the Paramatma, is situated within the heart of every living being, but still, they are far away from Krishna, because they are far away from that understanding of their relationship with Krishna. So a duratma is a person who is very far away. And they're also trying to satisfy the Atma, Dur Atma. They're trying to satisfy the Atma in a different way. So in a different way, which is far away from the Krishna conscious standard. So we know the Atma can only be satisfied, can be served, when the Atma is in connection with the Paramatma, or the Supreme Atma, Krishna. So when that relationship, that connection is there, then we are satisfied. But Adhuratma is far away from that understanding. So the majority of the conditioned souls in this material world are Duratmas. And then Prabhupada mentions how that by the influence of false ego, here Prabhupada mentions, in the Bhagavad Gita, 1854, it is clearly explained that an absolutely self-realized soul becomes aloof from material desires. Material desires are based on the false ego of the living being and are exhibited by his childish and useless activities to conquer the laws of material nature. So when we have the concept that we are the body, so as I was mentioning in the other day, that the false ego is the bridge. The false ego is the medium by which we identify with the body. So the spirit and matter are completely separate. They got nothing to do with each other. But we identify that connection with matter is made through the medium of false ego. So that ahankar is like that imaginary bridge which connects us to the body. And because of strong identification with the body, we are affected by the material circumstances. So whether it's pain or pleasure, honor, dishonor. So we are affected by all these circumstances because of strong attachment to the body. Someone who's not very attached to their body, they're not affected by all these things. So as Prabhupada quotes the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma Na Sochati Na Kankshati. So a self-realized person, he is beyond any hankering or lamentation. So a conditioned soul is consumed by hankering and lamentation. So, whereas the self-realized soul is free of material desires. So the false ego is the imaginary bridge by which we are strongly bound up by this material body. So as Krishna mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, that this Atma, this spirit soul, is encased in material elements. So we are entangled in this body which is made up of material and elements. So liberation means to come out of these material elements and to establish our relationship with Krishna. So false ego is that which is binding us, and we are acting in very childish and useless ways, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport. That because of this false ego, our activities are very childish. Just like those of you who are parents, you have children, you know their activities are childish. They are, in one sense, they're meaningless. They engage in so many activities, and you know, it's just very, they're very insignificant. So in the same way, we are acting in childish ways. So we are, childish way means we are trying to be happy without serving God, without serving Krishna. So that is a childish endeavor. That's a futile endeavor. So the conditioned soul is trying to satisfy himself or herself by fulfilling their material desires in so many ways. And that attempt in itself is very childish, because it's not possible to be happy in this material world. It's impossible to be happy. So any genuine religious system will inform us that we cannot be happy in this material world. And happiness is in relationship with God. Any bona fide religion will tell us. Whether it's Christianity or Islam or even Buddhism, it says that in this material world there is no happiness. So this endeavor for seeking happiness is a futile and childish attempt. So we have this Duratma mentality, and that is that's within every conditioned soul. So every conditioned soul is thinking like that. That's why we're here in this material world. And the material education, it solidifies that conception which we already have by being in this material world. So as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Jara Vidya Yata Mayara Vaibhav Tomara Bhajane Bada. So he said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that materialistic studies, or you can say materialistic science, materialistic studies are the glare of Maya only, for they are an obstacle to spiritual progress. So we say that this mundane education is an obstacle to spiritual progress, because it is enhancing our wrong conception of life. So by default, being in the material world, we have this understanding we are the body and we are independent. And we are independent of the laws of nature. So materialistic science, it solidifies that understanding we have. And because of miseducation, so much harm has been done in this world. So we can see that practically how these days religion is considered to be outmoded. Right, when you, these days, you should not even bring God in a scientific assembly. If you bring God, the very word God, in a scientific assembly, they're saying, you know, there's no rationality in that. You're not being rational here. So therefore you have to throw God out of the window. So we can see that faith in science has ruined things, has ruined people's lives. So real education means spiritual education, and that's what was imparted before through gurukuls and different kinds of schools. This education, Kaumara Acharit Pragya, was such education was given right from the beginning of life, from the age of 4 or 5 years. So through the Varnashram system. So it started with Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. So this is real human civilization. But today's material education is destroying things. So when you talk about religion, people say you're being unscientific. This is just a sentiment, it's a blind faith. Or, you know, religion is medieval man, they wrote something, you know, they had some nice insights, and they wrote something which was, you know, useful, you know, some nice points are there, but overall it has no rational basis and it's just unscientific. So we see this kind of understanding has ruined people's lives, because we are raised in that kind of, we are raised with that kind of knowledge. So for a lot of people, when they approach religion, or when they come across a genuine religion, they think that's also unscientific. So a genuine religion like Krishna consciousness, they think that's also unscientific. So we see that modern science has two primary features. Who knows that? Okay. Yeah, I wasn't thinking that. But that's also there. True. That's true. Intimidation and bluffing. That's very true. So the two primary features which I had in mind are, one is theories. They're theories. And then there's systematic experimentation. There's experimentation and there's theories. So in other words, there's the theoretical approach and then there's the experimental approach. So science is that's what these two primary features are. So we can say there's science is full of theories. So like, you know, the theory of atom, electron, electromagnetic field, you know, the spinning, the valence, or whatever. So these are all theories. And then there are experiments carried out, which by carrying out those experiments, one can obtain verifiable knowledge. Or one can obtain, you know, you can predict certain kind of things. So you have the theories based on, then you carry out certain experiments, then you get verifiable knowledge. So that's the basic premise. So, in other words, anyone can obtain certain results by carrying out certain experiments in a certain way. Then you can get predictable results. So these are the two primary features of science. And we see in the main contribution of science has been in the field of physics and chemistry. And everything else is more or less based on that. So in physics and chemistry, they have achieved a lot of success. So in other words, they say that chemistry, meaning everything is atoms, electrons, these are all theories, the electromagnetic field. And they've come out very successful in that. And we can see they've made so many scientific advancements based on such kind of understanding. And they say that there are physical, the impersonal physical laws of nature, which govern everything. So based on that, yes, science has made a lot of advancement in matter. And yes, wherever credit is due, we should give them. So with all these things around us, they've made so much advancement. But the problem is that comes in the with the human tendency. If something is very successful, then the human tendency is to think that's perfect and that's universal. That's where the problem comes. So, material science explains everything is like broken down into atoms, electrons, and so on and so forth. And that's all they know, and because that's all they know, and they made so much advancement based on that understanding, then they think that's all there is. So therefore this kind of knowledge is universal and it is perfect. So that's where the problem comes in. So in other words, there's this term, extrapolation. You know the meaning of extrapolate? Extrapolate means to extend the application of a method or conclusion which is based on statistics to an unknown situation by assuming that existing trends will continue or similar methods will be applicable. So in other words, you have certain knowledge and you apply it on, you take it further and you assume everything is like that. That's what it means to extrapolate. So this extrapolation is actually unscientific. So just because they know a certain worldview, then they'll impose that on everything else. And they said, this is the only worldview. So therefore they say that there is matter, and matter is governed by impersonal laws of physics. And that's all there is. In other words, then they say, then they take it further and say, life comes from matter. Because all we know is matter, therefore life originates from matter. And Prabhupada, there's one book called Life Comes from Life. So where Prabhupada came and he said the exact opposite. He said, life comes from life. So if they're being scientific, they have to prove that, but there's no proof for that, that life comes from matter. So then they said, because life comes from matter, therefore religion has no real significance. Then they'll take that further and said, religion has no real significance because life is just boils down to matter, and you know, there's no spiritual dimension. So what to speak of God? So how can electrons and protons worship God, have a relationship with God? So therefore religion has no real significance. Religion is just something which is to bring people together, unite them for some certain cause. And you know, religion has some good things that, you know, reduces trouble in the world at most. So, but other than that, it has not much real significance. And science has a lot of significance because with science we have done so many things. We have made so many advancements. And we can see in the field of applied technology, they've made so many advancements. But actually, Krishna consciousness is scientific. So Krishna, whereas materialism is not scientific. So Krishna consciousness is scientific because even in Krishna consciousness, we can take the same thing. There is theory and there is experiment. Even in the realm of bhakti, there is the theoretical aspect and then there's the experimental side. So the shastras give the theoretical point of view. So like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all the scriptures, they outline the theoretical basis of bhakti yoga. But then we have to put it in practice, and that's where the experimental side comes. So yeah, we can also say, yes, okay, science is theory and experiment. You see, Krishna consciousness is also the same. There is theory. You know, you simply knowing you're the... There's a theory that we are not the body, but we are the soul. So if someone puts it, someone follows Krishna consciousness, then they can experience that. So if we take Bhagavad Gita or the Vedic Shastras, there are two theoretical points of view, two theoretical worldviews. One is that we are an eternal, conscious, living entity. So in other words, we are spiritual by nature. So the Shastras tell us, point number one, we all are spiritual, we are not this body, and we are eternal, and we are conscious, and we are an individual, and we stay forever. And point number two, that there is a supreme intelligent being behind material nature. So these are the two main points. So yes, even modern science will agree. Modern science also says, yes, the body is a machine. The body is a complicated mechanism. In other words, the body is a biochemical mechanism. It's all biochemistry. So the Bhagavad Gita also agrees with that, but there is more to that. So the Bhagavad Gita also says, yes, the body is a mechanism, yantra rudhani mayaya. So the body is a machine. It's a very complicated machine, but the machine is only inanimate. It's actually dead. There's no feelings in the body. It's not sentient. Whereas the Atma is fully conscious and situated within the body. And the Atma is driving the body. The Atma is the driver in the body. But science will say, no, the body is only electrons and protons. And from that, that is the source of all the emotions and the life and everything. But there has been no material experiment which has been able to prove that, or been able to give direct evidence of the presence of the soul. They cannot deny the soul. They cannot deny it. They cannot deny that there is something. But at the same time, they cannot directly prove it. Because they are trying with material means to prove something spiritual, which is impossible to do. So with their electron microscope or whatever, you know, they're trying to find out what is there at the root. But they cannot find out anything, so then they'll conclude that everything boils down to matter, atoms, electrons, and so on and so forth. So just because they have negative scientific findings doesn't mean that the spiritual side is not there. So just because they are unable to find out, then they very arrogantly say, there's no spiritual dimension to life. So that's where the problem comes. And then they teach that. So then in the material universities and schools, from a young age we are taught that. You know, this is the foundational blocks of life. And that's all there is. And there's no spiritual dimension. So see how, because there's this materialistic understanding and it is further grounded by such kind of knowledge. So we can see that material science is actually biased and it's unscientific. It's like measuring speed with a litmus paper. You know, if you want to measure speed, there's a different device for that. So if you want to find out about the soul, there's a different means for that. With material means, it's impossible to find out, to get direct evidence of our identity. It's impossible. So then the second point of the Shastras is that behind material nature, there's a supremely intelligent being. So even some scientists will agree with that. Yes, they're... what's that? Expelled, right? No intelligence allowed. So there are these scientists who were saying that there is intelligence out there. And that's the cause of everything. That's the cause of matter. But then the scientists were saying, no, you're not being rational because you're bringing God in. So they were saying intelligence will refer to God, therefore you're not being scientific. So they expelled them. But even many religions or traditional religions, they have the idea, yes, there's a supreme intelligent being who's out there, and that's the cause of matter. But the Vedic Shastras take it much more further. So the Bhagavad Gita explains, yes, there is a supremely intelligent being, and there's the Brahman aspect, there's the Paramatma aspect, and there's the Bhagavan aspect. So the supremely intelligent being is even within our hearts. Sarvasya chaham hiti sanivishto matta smitir jnanam apohanam cha. So this supremely intelligent being, the Paramatma, is directing the wanderings of all living beings and giving them remembrance, forgetfulness and knowledge. So there's this, everyone gets inspiration from within, the power of inspiration. So where is that coming from? It's coming from the Paramatma. So that's the proof that yes, there is a supremely intelligent being. So if someone has a little bit of, if someone who's sane, who's not insane, they'll study nature and come to the conclusion, there has to be some God, there has to be an intelligent being out there because there's so much variety and there's so much structure. Everything is happening in a very coordinated fashion. So one will come to the conclusion there is some intelligence behind all this. And Bhagavad Gita takes it further by saying, yes, God is within, that intelligent being is not only at a very distant place, but he's within everyone, he's within everyone also. And he has his personal form also. So there's this power of inspiration. Many artists and mathematicians or scientists, they know that. Some of them work by, everyone actually works by the power of inspiration. And those who are little pious, they will admit, yes, there's something beyond me which gave me that inspiration. So many scientific discoveries have actually happened by the power of inspiration. And just to give one example, there's this mathematician, his name was Carl Gauss. So he said this, I succeeded not on account of my painful efforts, but by the grace of God, because he's a bit pious. Like a sudden flash of lightning, the riddle happened to be solved. I myself cannot say what connected what I previously knew with what made my success possible. So he himself is admitting that it's not by my efforts only, but by some other, you know, divine entity, I found out. The riddle is solved in a moment, in a flash. So we can see there's this power of inspiration, there's a divine being which is giving intelligence. So that's the proof that yes, there is God. So Krishna consciousness is the same. There's the theory, we can read the books, but simply by reading Shastra, that's not enough. We have to apply the Shastra in our life. So we also have, there are certain rules. When you perform an experiment, there are certain rules. You don't do this, you do that. So in Krishna consciousness, it's the same. There are certain do's and there are certain do nots. So do nots are, do not break the four regulative principles. And chant 16 rounds. So there's the do's and do not. And then in Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives so many do's and do nots. You know, do this. Here, stay in the association of devotees. Hear from a bona fide spiritual master. Take shelter, take initiation. Inquire from and follow the footsteps of the acharyas. So these are all the do's. Then he gives the do nots. do not associate with non-devotees. And Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Instruction also gives the do nots. Atyahara, Prayasascha, Prajalpa, Niyamagraha. So these are all the do nots. So if we follow that, bhakti is a science. We will get the result. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, many, many persons in the past have achieved success. And he even names them. Kings like Janak. And the names are given. People in the past have achieved success. And we can see even people in the present have achieved success. So, but of course, Krishna consciousness is subjective. In other words, by practicing the process of Krishna consciousness, then Krishna reveals himself in the heart of the devotee. So only that devotee will have that experience. But the process is open for everyone. So we can also take the process and we can also get the same results. Other people in the past have done it and the symptoms are given. So material science is also, in one sense, a little bit subjective also. You know, certain experiments are made, they are made with very, very expensive equipments. Most people like us, we don't have access to those equipments. So only few people know the results of that. They have done it. So the rest of us are just accepting it on faith. So in the same way, Krishna consciousness, if we practice it, then everything is given. When you practice like this, all the stages are given. So first there is association of devotees. One's faith develops a little bit. And then one follows the process of, there's bhajana kriya. There's one does the bhajan, sadhana bhakti. Then there's anartha nivritti. So all these stages are there, and anartha nivritti means all material desires are gone. Then there's nishta, ruchi, asaktis, bhavas, bhava, and then there's spring. So all the stages are there, and one can see which stage one is at by an honest assessment. So if we know the shastra and we are practicing, one can come to the understanding which stage we are situated at. So here in this verse, the process of Ashtanga Yoga is given to quit the body. So this process of Ashtanga Yoga was prominent in the bygone ages, in the days of yore. So Ashtanga Yoga was actually for Satya Yuga. So Satya Yuga was meditation. So Treta Yuga, sacrifice. Dvapara Yuga, deity worship. And Kali Yuga, chanting the holy names. So here it's mentioned that one has to raise the life air to the cerebral pit, and once it's there, one can, depending if one is a devotee, one can go back to Godhead. So in this body we have six kinds of air. I'll just read. There's the prana, apana, udana, vyana, and samana. So, in a body, there's six kinds of air. Actually, the 10 kinds of air. So, I'll read you those 10. So, the main air which passes through the nose, that's called prana. And the air which passes through the rectum as evacuated bodily air, that's called apana. So, here the yogi is blocking that air hole from which the apana air escapes. The air which adjusts the foodstuff within the stomach and which sometimes sound as belching. So if you're making, you know, such sounds, then you should understand that air is called samana. And the air which passes through the through the throat and which causes the stoppage or which constitutes the suffocation is called udana. So sometimes you're feeling suffocated. That's udana air. And the total air which circulates throughout the entire body, that's called vyana. And then there are airs which are even more subtle than these types of air. So there are five, and they are called, there's one called naga, which basically facilitates the opening of the eyes. So anytime we're blinking, that's because of this air. So then there's an air which increases the appetite in the stomach, and that's called kakara air. So if you're feeling hungry now, that's because of that air. And then there's an air which causes contraction, and that's called kurma. And the air which helps relaxation by opening the mouth wide when someone is yawning, that's called devadatta. So when you're yawning, that's the devadatta air. And the air which helps sustenance, that's called dhanijaya air. So there are these 10 kinds of airs within the body, and they regulate the functioning of the body. So those who know Ayurveda, it's because of the imbalance in the air. So they try to treat, and even many mental illnesses can be cured by pranayama, by regulating the air. So we see in Ashtanga Yoga there is Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar. So the pranayam is related to the breath. So the breath has a connection, a strong connection to the mind. So through pranayam one can control the mind. It's possible to control the mind by pranayam. And of all these airs, the prana is the most important air. Because the prana, it surrounds the soul, and when this prana air leaves the body, the soul cannot maintain, cannot remain in that body. So the soul also leaves. Then there's a saying, pran chale gaye. So the pran means the soul is floating in these airs, and of those airs, the prana is the vital air, it's the most important. And even we see in the story of Puranjana, which is a figurative description. When Puranjana saw the woman, she was surrounded by bodyguards, and there was also a snake. And that snake represents the prana, the vital air. And we see that the yogis, who were very expert in controlling the life air, they would do pranayama for many, many years, for a long time, and they could control the airs within the body. And by doing that, they could increase their lifespan, the longevity of their life, just by controlling the life air. And by controlling the life air, they didn't even have to eat and drink. They could control even their eating and drinking. So, just simply by maintaining the life air, one does not have to eat and drink also. And that's by yoga. It's possible to do that. And the example of that is Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu, when he went to the Mandara mountain, which is a very high mountain, even higher than the Himalayas, because Mount Meru is the highest. So when he went there, he did severe tapasya. And he was standing there on one leg, on the toes, with his arms raised, for many, many years. And he was just maintaining himself by his life air. The ants had eaten his whole body. But because his life air was there, he was sustaining himself. And he was not eating anything. And we see even in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, when he went to the forest, he went to Madhuvan. Dhruva Maharaj went to Madhuvan. And there, so for the first month, Dhruva Maharaj was engaged in Ashtanga Yoga. So, in the first month, Dhruva Maharaj only ate fruits and berries every third day. So every third day he would eat some fruits and berries. And then the second month, every 6 days, he ate. And he only took dry grass and leaves. So it became more austere. And then in the third month, he only drank water every 9 days. So even more austere. And then in the fourth month, he was only breathing, and he only inhaled every 12 days. So every 12 days he would breathe. So we can see and he was only 5 years old. So he could stop his eating and drinking by the power of yoga, by pranayama. He could, by regulating the life air, he could control that. He could actually give it up, gradually. And then in the fifth month, he had controlled his breathing perfectly, and he was just standing on one leg. So there's, in yoga, there's the stage of Kumbhaka, and before that there's Rechaka. So Rechaka means the is maintaining that equilibrium for the ingoing breath and the outgoing breath, the prana and the apana, to have that equilibrium. And then kumbhaka means when it's all seized. So that's the stage of kumbhaka. So through the process of Ashtanga Yoga, one can become aloof from the body. But it's a mechanical process. So mechanical means because it's dealing with a machine, and the body is a machine. So in Kali Yuga, we don't have such kinds of bodies. Our bodies are very, very weak. So in the bygone ages, people's bodies were extremely fit, and they could do such kind of yoga. And they could achieve perfection through such kind of yoga. But this is a mechanical way, because again, it's dealing with the machine, it's dealing with the body. Whereas even Bhakti Yoga is not really mechanical, though of course we are using the body, but it is not as mechanical as Ashtanga Yoga. So we also need to maintain a body, it has to be fit to a degree. But it's not mainly depending on the body. So Bhakti Yoga is the direct connection with Krishna. So it's on a totally different dimension. So of course in the bygone ages, people could do such kind of practice because they were qualified. So if we think our body is very fit, just look in the mirror. Just see your body in the mirror, and you'll see how unfit we are. So as Krishna mentions, the prerequisites for Ashtanga Yoga, one has to go to the forest. One has to live in the forest. Not many of us are willing to live in the forest. And not only that, we might like to go to the forest, but one has to live there alone. Now that's very difficult. Mm-hmm. Even when we plan a trip, we want to go to some other country, we don't like to go alone. We're always planning a trip with other devotees or with someone. We know someone there, we'll catch up with them. So going alone is, you know, we'll get bored. So a yogi has to live in the forest, which is a dangerous place, and also live alone and free from any feelings of possessiveness. But in Kali Yuga, the process of advancement is much more simpler and much more potent also. So the Ashtanga Yoga is mechanical. So one has to do so much kinds of austerities and all that. But in Kali Yuga, the process has been made much more simpler. And even the demigods are lining up to take birth in Kali Yuga. Because Kali Yuga, there is mixed happiness and distress. In the heavenly planets, there's only happiness, material happiness. So there it's hard to focus on spiritual life because one gets carried away. Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktana. So by Bhoga and Aishwarya, we usually get distracted. So in Kali Yuga, there's mixed happiness and distress. So there is happiness for a short while, but then there will be distress. So both are there, and both don't last forever. So Kali Yuga is very conducive for making spiritual advancement. Because one does not get very comfortable here. That's the whole idea. So in Kali Yuga, the prime means of advancement is by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Krishna Varnam Tusha. What is it? Krishna, Varnam, Tusha, Krishna, Sango, Pangasha, Pashanam, Yagyaya, Sankirtana, Praya, Yajanti, Hi, Sumerasa. So intelligent persons in the age of Kali take up to the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord, which was done by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. So in Kali Yuga, that's the prime means of advancement. And the result we get is much more than that. So I'll leave it here. Do you have any questions or comments? Yeah, it's a bit tricky. So question is, Krishna gives inspiration in the heart. How do we know it's Krishna or it's a mind? Good question. Actually, most of the time our mind is telling us things. Do this, do that. And our mind is jumping like a monkey from one thought to another. But we all know when there is someone else who is telling us from within, you know, don't do this, do like that. It's that intuitive feeling one gets. Yeah, so there's the Chaitya Guru, and then there's two kinds of spiritual masters. There's the Guru within the heart, the Paramatma, and there's the manifestation of the Paramatma as the spiritual master without. So that's a good point. We have to verify, if we think this inspiration is coming from the Lord, we have to verify with our spiritual master and other Vaishnavas, and by Shastra also. Otherwise one could say, you know, Krishna told me to do this. It's like one person, he was telling me the other day, he was caught stealing from the bhoga room, from the cool room. And I pulled him up, asked him, you know, why did you steal? He said, Krishna gave me the gift. Krishna told me this is a gift from me and I can take it. So we can actually come up with anything. Our mind will tell us, and then we might take it as, Krishna told me that's a gift from me, and therefore I took it. But that has to be corroborated with Shastra and with the Guru. So Shastra doesn't say, go and steal Krishna's bhoga. So that kind of instruction cannot come from the super soul. That's the point. Anything else? Yeah.
So in this purport, the Prabhupada states in the end of the purport that there was a mechanical process of liberation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of liberation is it, and why? Isn't it like the fact that it is possible to obtain a liberation by the mechanical process? Is this fact tells us that the, you know, liberation is independent of Krishna? Because, you know, in that mechanical process, the Krishna isn't involved. It's just a mechanical process. So what kind of liberation?
Okay.
Krishna in that?
Well, the liberation depends on the conception of the yogi, what kind of conception they have, what kind of understanding they have. So the culmination of Ashtanga Yoga is in realizing the Paramatma within the heart. So Ashtanga Yoga is perfect when one can, that's what we heard in the previous text, that Shukadev Goswami, from the Virat conception, now next is going to the Paramatma feature of the Lord. He's encouraging Maharaj Parikshit to meditate on the Paramatma feature. So the conclusion of Ashtanga Yoga is in realizing the Paramatma feature, not only realizing him, but actually worshipping him within the heart. And that will only come if one has studied Shastra. So the yogis in the earlier stages, they also have knowledge of Shastra. So if they've studied Shastra properly, they'll know there's Paramatma within the heart. And the whole idea is to worship the Lord within the heart. So depending on what kind of conception the yogi has. So it's a mechanical means, but by this mechanical means, one can even go to heaven. One can go to any material planet in this world, or one can go to the spiritual world. So a yogi who only has a material conception, who wants to enjoy in this world, they can also do yoga and they can go to Swarga. So, but a yogi who has further knowledge, he'll understand that there's the Lord within the heart, and I want to cultivate a relationship. Then they use this form of this process.
So it is this.
Or they can even achieve Brahman. They can even achieve Brahman liberation. So it depends on what conception they have.
So that means this process of this mechanical process is basically about the liberation from the law of nature, which gives us another body and forces us to a particular plane or a particular position. Is it
what?
I mean, this mechanical liberation,
yeah,
which is mentioned here.
It's a mechanical means of going to another place. So whether you want to stay in this world or you want to get out of it, that's up to the yogi.
Yeah, so basically it's kind of a liberation from the laws of material nature, which gives us another body. Because we can't choose the body, right? We are given the body. But this yogis,
yeah,
they
that's
actually,
right. Yeah.
You know, decide on which body they take next.
Yeah, they can decide which planet they want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they can choose that. But if they stay in the material world, they're still under the laws of nature. Because they have to take birth and die. So they'll only achieve liberation if they go beyond the material world. And for doing that, they have to have some understanding. So they can overcome certain laws of nature, but not everything if they stay in this material world. But if they go beyond the material world, then that's liberation. So if they just go to another planet, what's the point? You're still in the material world, and you're operating within certain laws. But only it's just you choose a certain body in a certain planet. That's all.
Essential element is only Krishna when you engage your service. So you go beyond the laws of nature. Okay. You have to surrender to Krishna.
Yeah.
In the permission to the king is by Shri Chakravarti Thakur, who is talking about the mission of bhakti. He defines that unless and until, if you are very perfectly performing any form of mission of bhakti, be it karma, jnana, dhyana, if there is not the central tinge of connection with the Supreme, there is going to be no spiritual result.
Yeah.
There's going to be no result. It's just mechanical, and it will give you some mechanical elevation within the cosmic creation.
Yeah.
Go beyond that.
That's right.
To connect.
That's
even
right.
For karma yoga, if you actually want the result of karma yoga, although it is a physical process, I give this in charity, I get that much in return. It does not award you anything spiritual.
Yeah.
So anything spiritual, I think that's what Prabhu's question is, that if it is a mechanical process, how can it be liberation?
Yeah, and also there's another aspect to it, because basically if you are not a subject to the material laws, you can decide anytime, you can quit the material world, you know, you're always liberated, isn't it?
No, you're only liberated if you're beyond the material covering.
But if you can decide yourself.
But that doesn't mean you're liberated. That doesn't mean you're liberated. You'll only be liberated when there's that connection with Krishna. As the word yoga means connection with the Supreme Lord. So if one just has knowledge of this mechanical process, one can go to any planet in this world. But the point is, you're not liberated because you're still in the material world. So how are you liberated? There is birth, there is death. But if there is yoga, if there is connection with the Supreme, depending on one's understanding, then one can get liberated by doing this. So simply having mechanical knowledge of this doesn't mean you're liberated.
Sunny,
does that mean you're free to roam around but not liberated?
Yeah, you can free to roam around, choose whichever planet you want to go in this world. But you're still within the material universe, within the seven elements of the material universe. So you're not liberated. Liberation only comes by by Krishna's mercy and by understanding Him, whether it is Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagwan. So the point is, the yogi has to have knowledge before he engages in Ashtanga Yoga. If they don't have this knowledge, they're going to end up in the material world only. Yes. Last point.
First of all, thank you very much. It's a very nice lecture on this subject. Srila Prabhupada was giving a similar lecture in London, hearing last night, then before, 1 year before that, leaving the body, 1976. He was saying the same thing. It was a lecture about electronics or any mechanical device. There were thousands of people. Many institutions of connection with Krishna on a very few. Then only we can get it. Otherwise, all the Shramay may kill you.
Shramay may kill you. Thank you very much. Granth Raj Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Prabhupada ki.
Jai.